This is Mary Jane from PiratePods.com, and I'm in M Theory with
Alan Wilder from Recoil.
Supreme talks about his baby's mother like a whore. Sweet 16 she is, with future uncertain, love incomplete. Soapy days for Junior and she. At 3, Supreme comes to give his boy a pat and a pound, put his hoodie on the couch, his Timberlands up on the chair so his bitch can bring him a beer. So, this is the nuclear family. Mommy, baby, and daddy makes a mess of his baby's mother's hair as they fuck till her mother comes in from work.
So why don't you give us a real quick history of the project Recoil and what the music's about, what it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, Recoil was a project I started when I was still a member of Depeche Mode in 1986. And I left the band sort of 7 or 8 years later, and what was my side project continued to be into being my main project. So it's been going ever since then, nearly 25 years now. But I've never really managed to sort of take it on the road before now. So this year has been quite a new experience for Recoil to finally find a way to bring the project into the live arena. And the reason it's been so difficult is because the Recoil project is quite unusual. You know, it's not a band. It's music I put together in a studio, and after which I invite vocalists to come and collaborate. And, you know, it's more like a collective, if you like, you know. And lots of different musicians and singers involved, but I kind of control the thing. And the atmosphere of the music is kind of dark and soundtrack-like, less pop than what I used to do with Depeche Mode.
Mm-hmm. Well, earlier in the year, you released Recoil Selected, which is a best-of CD. How do you compress 25 years of music onto two discs?
Well, it is 25 years, but it's not actually that vast amount of music, because I'm quite slow in between albums. There's been six albums maybe, and you know, so it's not that vast amount. I'm kind of quality over quantity is my attitude, you know. Plus, I like to have a life, which means you know, I'm just not constantly in the studio. I like to do other things. I've got a family, and so it takes me, you know, 3 years between albums at least. Sometimes longer. Choosing the material, I guess, wasn't as difficult as I thought, because there seems to be more cohesion between the music on the last three albums, and most of this collection is comprised of those albums, just put together in a way that works for me. You know, it's my own personal choices. I wanted an album that would still flow and sound like a proper album rather than just a best of. So it was an interesting challenge, you know, to put it all together.
Well, I personally really love the song Luscious Apparatus. So I was just wondering, is there a story behind that one?
Well, all the stories, the words are written by others. So, and I don't like to quiz whoever ends up as being a vocalist. I don't like to quiz them on what they write about. I kind of give them a free rein, let them come up with ideas, and really just interpret the words just like any listener would, and let them mean whatever they mean for me, rather than give them a definitive meaning. So really it's down to the listener to decide what they think it's all about. I mean, the story of recording the thing was just the usual way I work, where I put music together first and then try and think of vocalists. And I just put the word around in this particular case to some friends and said, who do you think might be useful, you know? And a friend of mine, Steve Lyon, who is an engineer I've worked with going back to the Depeche Mode days, he said, oh, I've just met this girl, Maggie Estep, you know, she's really talented, I've just done an album with her, why don't you try her, you know? And that's how she came to the project. Generally speaking, you know, with the vocalist, it's usually word of mouth. Someone suggests someone, or I hear something, I think, oh, that person would be good. Or in the case of Joe Richardson, I even Google searched for a blues singer and found him, you know. So there are no real rules and regulations to it.
Carla was on a break from the graveyard shift at the mayonnaise factory. She sat at a teetering picnic table. There was a toxic orange moon, and it was slightly cold. Carla took out her knife and began etching random words into the table's surface. Then she thought of her co-worker, Jack. Carla liked to think of Jack as a luscious apparatus. He was meaty but graceful. His flesh seemed folded under his body like a suit made of meat. Carla started to think of Jack as a luscious apparatus in a meat suit.
Is there anyone you'd really like to work with in the future?
There are one or two vocalists I've always had in the back of my mind, you know, but I don't know if they'd ever be available. I mean, Mark Hollis would be one from Talk Talk, but I think he kind of bailed out of the music business a long time ago. No one's really heard of him since the last Talk Talk records. So I think that's unlikely. You know, I also like people like Elizabeth Fraser. Massive Attack used her. There's Morrissey, of course. He's a great, great vocal, great lyricist in particular, and a singer.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of other people too. You know, I'm always keeping my ears open for interesting contributors.
If you had to pick a Recoil track to be your theme song, which one do you think would be most appropriate?
Oh, that's a bit difficult. It's really a difficult question to answer. You know, I don't have one particular favourite. I think you could look at something like Strange Hours or Jezebel or Prey, you know, as something that sort of encompasses everything I do. You know, it's kind of dark atmosphere, but it has a kind of structure and really great sort of blues bass vocals. And that's quite typical of what you might expect from me.
Way back yonder in the olden days, John told Jezebel about her ways. Said evil deeds had ruined the land, and repent for the kingdom of God was at hand. She got mad at John cause he told about the gospel, told her servants to boil him in oil. But the tells me God looked from the windows of heaven, spoke one word and the oil wouldn't boil. He raised his hands, creation trembled, stamped his feet and time stood still. He raised his voice, looked down and thundered, John, go to my bill. You got to go to church, but stand by. You got to go to church, but stand by. You got to go to church, but stand by. You got to go to church, but stand by.
Well, this question is sort of inspired by my friend over there. I think he's one of your drivers. What is there a Recoil track that you would like to see performed on a karaoke stage?
Oh, karaoke. Well, oh, that's a really difficult one to answer. Which would be the best song on a karaoke stage? I don't know. It's I don't. There's no particular song, though. I mean, the ones with the most musical vocals, I suppose, are maybe some of the Joe Richardson tracks on the last Subhuman album, or there's something like Drifting that's kind of good to sing along to.
Ignore me and everything I've done, for I'm stupid, I'm poison, I take this one. I taste the tracks the waste in my head, and you face me instead. I must be
drifted somewhere.
And what about you when you karaoke? What do you want to sing? Non-Recoil.
No. You won't get me on a karaoke stage singing.
No?
There'll have to be an awful lot of vodka involved first.
Okay. Well, coming from a pop background and seeing sort of how the industry's evolved right now, is that something you'd ever jump back into?
You mean being in a band or a pop?
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever want to go back to being in a band, no. I mean, staying in the music business is something I do want to do. You know, I want to make records, I always want to make music. What form it takes doesn't... you never really quite know, because it's changing so fast, and the nature of how one releases records and what you supply, what you produce as an end product is just changing all the time. You know, we all know that CDs sales are diminishing, but people are going towards sort of limited edition box sets and downloads and different ways of collecting and listening to music. The music itself is still something I'm very passionate about.
What are your feelings about how self-promotion has become so important for musicians?
Well, I feel it's something that's vital, you know. So, especially for an artist like myself, I have good support from a record company, but I don't have like a huge financial backing that some artists obviously do. And so I have to find alternative ways to promote what I do. And obviously the internet is the first port of call for everything these days, you know. And social networking, social forums, your Facebooks, Twitters, you know, all those places, you know. I kind of engage with them all, and I'm quite hands-on with it as well, because I think it's really important. And I've actually formed some great relationships, you know, by communicating with fans over the years, and out of that, you know, formed good working relationships too. Some of the filmmakers we use on the tour, for example, you know, are people that have written in to me and said, what can I do, you know. So it's really important, you know, to promote yourself that way, yeah.
Well, like you said, you've met some of your filmmakers that way. And because you have filmmakers contribute to your show, would you ever work in the reverse and have your music contribute to a film?
Certainly, yes. Yeah. If someone wants me to do it. You know, I'm still waiting for someone to give me a serious offer to write a film score. You know, I've had Recoil music placed in film, existing Recoil music, but to write something specifically for film I have not really done, and I think I could do it, you know. I'm sure I can, you know.
Is there a particular type of project it would have to be?
Well, I guess anyone that might want to approach me would probably already be thinking in the same terms of the music I make already, you know, so it would probably be something a little bit dark, the thriller type thing, you know. I can't see my music suiting romantic comedy,
right?
You know, so I guess that's going to be a natural thing if it ever goes that way, you know. And someone's a bit late, but I'm still here.
Oh yeah, go right
ahead. No, hello.
Wait,
what are you sorry for? Don't be sorry, darling.
Say hello, this is Mr. Wilder.
Hello, how are you? You're not sorry. Don't be sorry, darling. Oh, you're so sweet. What's your name?
Octavia.
You're lovely. Oh, that's a great dress.
Yeah, she's hardcore. Sorry, when you're done.
Okay. She's hardcore. Okay, sweet.
So are there any life lessons that you've taken from being a professional and successful musician?
Life lessons. Well, mixing rock and roll and marriage is quite tricky. So life lessons, I don't know. I think it keeps you young and vital, you know, being in a band or just making music and touring and visiting, you know, different parts of the world, and all the things that go with being a musician tends to keep you, I don't know, a bit more vital, a bit more open-minded. I like to think I'm very open-minded and proactive and kind of ambitious, you know. Maybe that's just my natural nature anyway, whatever I would be doing. I don't know. I've certainly been lucky to be able to have a living out of doing something I really enjoy.
What do you think was like the greatest or most important moment in music history? Because you were part of a band that was such a big part of it recently.
Well, I think there's been, you know, obviously moments of significant change. 60s psychedelia was, you could go back before that, of course, to blues and jazz and sort of the birth of rock and roll. And then, of course, you've got the Beatles, which was kind of a vital breakthrough and made what was kind of throwaway disposable 50s music into quite cool 60s pop music for young people, you know. That was and then you had psychedelia come along, which kind of changed things again with people like Hendrix and Janis Joplin and The Doors and Rolling Stones. And then I guess the next big change would be like the punk movement, which kind of really helped to clear the cobwebs away from rock and roll, which had become a bit bloated, you know.
Right.
And groups like Depeche Mode could never have existed without the punk movement, and that whole idea that it was suddenly fine for you to, you know, need a great musical training to be in a band. You know, as long as you could bash out three chords, you could make music. And And Depeche Mode was like that. I mean, they never. It was very simple stuff in the early days. There were no musical background, musical training, but there were ideas, you know. So I think that really paved the way for just ideas people, you know. And I guess there's been more. I don't really know what's so significant since then, you know. I mean, there are obviously changes in style that have. But I guess I'm referring to the age I grew up in, you know, and when you're young, music seems to affect you most, you know, from the age of about 14 through to 30, say, you know, that's when, or 25, they're the real formative years, they're the years when you're probably most passionate.
Right.
Yes.
So if there were a sound sample named after you, the Alan Wilder, what would it sound like?
Dark, mysterious, atmospheric, you know, I don't know.
Okay. And you're on tour right now, but what else are you looking forward to with Recoil?
I think I'd like to do a few more events here and there, maybe just more as one-offs rather than a long tour. You know, we've been touring all year on and off. So the occasional interesting collaborative event, you know, whether it's an event or some kind of happening, something, just something. I'd like to be more open-minded. I haven't done a lot of performance stuff for years, so now I think, now having done this, it's possible to do that. And then, of course, make a new record and write some new material and all those things, you know.
Right, well, I've just got three quick silly questions I always ask everyone.
What a silly one.
And the first one is, do you have any slang terms that you overuse?
Slang terms? Well, you know, I have a bit of Cockney rhyming slang, you know, you can throw in every now and again. We refer to people as pothouses sometimes, the crazies, the crazy ones. I can't think slang. I mean, I like Cockney rhyming slang because it's very unique. And, of course, all slang is about sort of coded ways of speaking amongst your own circle that nobody else can really understand. So it's useful on occasion, you know, when you're dealing with Americans.
Right. All right. What's your drink of choice?
I guess I like wine a lot. Red or white, but as long as it's a good quality wine, nice grape, you know, Pinot Noir or something. And if I drink anything else, it might be vodka or, you know, good European Belgian beers or Weiss beer, something like that. I quite enjoy, but that makes me fat, so I can't drink too much of that. So does the wine, actually.
That's all right. And how do you feel about eyeliner?
Eyeliner? Well, I'll resort to it occasionally, but it was big in the 80s, I know that. But, yeah, a little bit of eyeliner's all right.
Yeah. Are you putting it on during tour?
Occasionally.
Yeah. Right. So do you have any final words to say to fans listening?
Oh, not really. Just, you know, thanks for coming out to these shows and making us feel welcome. You know, it's been a lot of fun, and it's good to be back. All right.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks.